Streaming in this realm and beyond, you're listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio with your hosts, Peter Leonard, Rich Nicodem, and Dr. David DeProspero.
And welcome to another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. I am one of your hosts. My name is Steve, and welcome.
Welcome, everyone. This is Rich Nicodem. I haven't been around for a while. I was on hiatus, but I'm back on the show, hopefully permanently, but we'll see. We'll see how this episode goes.
Hi, this is Nicole Jeffrey.
And I'm Peter. I'm just a hyena.
Peter the hyena.
So if you'd like to call in tonight...
Steve is saying something, giving...
microphone. Steve speaking hieroglyphicals. 1-888-429-5471. If you have questions, comments, if you'd like to share your UFO captivity story with us, if you have a Bigfoot sighting, 1-888-429-5471.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That
excellent.
Pretty much sums it all.
If you've had sexual intercourse with a vampire, 1-888-429-5471.
Does it count if the chick looked like a vampire and it was a Halloween party and there was a lot of alcohol?
Yes.
Does it? It does count.
Okay. As long as it's not Tim Curry. You've made me watch that movie. I never saw the Rocky Horror Picture movie. Now I can't ever watch the movie Clue again. It's ruined forever.
I've never seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So.
Don't.
Well, Steve, send us off here. What's going on tonight? What are we doing?
Well, I guess that... We've got a few things going on.
Sweet.
Nicole's got a couple topics. We've got maybe a little plug for Mr. DiPaolo here tonight. And let's get it going. What do we got, guys?
1-888-429-5471.
Oh, and we also have stayspooky@yahoo.com.
That's right, we do. Yes.
That's right. That's always open.
If you want to hear a topic and we're not addressing the topic, you can send your ideas to stayspooky@yahoo.com, and get that on the air, and we'll say your name on the air, too. So, send us your ideas.
Yeah, and if we like him, maybe we'll put him up on that website there where we can raise money. Take your idea, raise money, Kickstarter.
Oh, Kickstarter.
GoFundMe.
I saw a paranormal group. I'm not going to mention their name, but I saw a paranormal group put up a page, I think it was on GoFundMe or something. Then I'm a paranormal investigator, and I need money to buy equipment. So they started a page, like a Kickstarter or GoFundMe, one of those. I just thought it was kind of comical.
They have the word extraordinary in their name.
So, but yeah. You know, one thing I wanted to talk about, and I don't know if you guys have covered this.
Do you know the difference between the ordinary and the extraordinary? It's just that little bit extra. Sorry, Rich.
It's all right, Pete. You know, the one thing that we always talk about on the show is the paranormal. You know, paranormal stories, paranormal experiences. And Nicole's got a few things like Ghost Ship or something like that, some stuff to talk about tonight.
Nothing super important, but I got a couple of things that popped up in the news the past week or so.
Everything in the paranormal is super important. Come on. But one thing I wanted to talk about was, you know what? What if you are experiencing the paranormal for the very first time? So what do you do? Who do you call? I know someone's going to chime in now.
Oh, yeah.
So say, for instance, I guess, you buy a house, okay? You move in their house, and all of a sudden some strange things start to happen. So I think that's where a lot of people start to try to figure out what do they need to do and how do they handle this sort of thing. We as paranormal investigators know what to do if somebody calls us. But what do we tell people who are experiencing things? And what do we tell them to document it? Do we tell them to dismiss it? I figure since we've all been investigating for a number of years, maybe we could share some of that information to the listeners. So if anyone is having a paranormal problem, I'll give you a perfect example. This request came in off the Facebook page. I know Nicole saw it. Mm-hmm. And it was a girl who lived outside of our area here. And she said that things have been going on. She felt like she's been watched. She felt like she's been touched and some other things like that, and she reached out to us. And I told her to, first of all, to start documenting some of it. She lives in a house with her grandparents, and the only truly way that we can come in and actually help her is by doing a consultation. But we need permission by the homeowners to do that. Just because she lives there, we can't just show up and say, hi, we're here to help the girl that lives upstairs, you know? So I asked her to start documenting some things, and, you know, if she's hearing noises, if she has an audio recorder, and she did, to set it out, try to record that, to give us something to work with. So a while went by, maybe a year, I guess about a year.
About that.
And then just recently, she said, I've been scratched by a demon. I'm like, you're scratched by a demon? So she sent me some photos to take a look at. And there were some scratches. Based on the photos, the way the skin was angled and light, they looked to me like they're just light scratches, like three of them. and so she was freaking out a little bit. So I responded back to the Facebook and I just gave her my number. I said, give me a call. I want to talk to you. So she called me and she said, well, the scratches are from a demon. I'm like, how do you know the scratches are from a demon? Well, there's three. And I was told, I watched a TV show, and they said, when there's a scratch, it's a three, it's a demon. I go, no, that's not true. I'm not really sure where you heard that from. And the problem is that a lot of these paranormal shows, they sensationalize the paranormal, and basically everything happens is a demon. Because Zach Bagans has fought, you know, the legions of hell on TV before, so it's always a demon. So I told her to relax that, you know, essentially there's not a demon scratching her. If there's anything in the house that is paranormal related at all, that could just be getting her attention. But as we discussed things and talked, I did discover that she has pets, and she does have cats, and cats do sleep in bed with her at night. So there's a possibility, and she said, no, the cat wasn't in the room. Well, you know, been my experience that cats are freaking sneaky.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
I almost wet my pants one night. We were investigating up there in Woodgate, and that one came up to me, wrapped its leg around me in the pitch black. I froze solid, and I almost wet my pants.
It terrified me. Damn cats.
You can't hear those things coming. No, they make no noise whatsoever. At least the dog's like,
yep.
You hear the nails coming up, here comes the dog. But at least they give you a warning. Here I come, here I come. Those cats are sneaky little, you know what's. And so anyways, again, I told her if, you know, she's having problems, and again, she reiterated being, felt like she'd being watched and cold spots and all that kind of thing, that we can come into a consultation and help her. But again, we need permission to go in there because she's not the owner of the house, her grandparents.
Right.
And the grandparents said that they didn't want anyone in there because they didn't think there was anything going on. Mm-hmm. And if somebody did come in, they're concerned about stirring things up. Now, folks, a lot of times when we do investigations, we tell people before we leave that based on us being here and present with equipment stuff, that sometimes things will get stirred up.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily in a bad way, but not necessarily in a good way, but things will get stirred up. So, you know, that you know, risk is there. So it puts us in a little bit of a quandary because we want to help this person, but we can't go in there to help them. And I did ask her to send me the audio files. She said she had some recordings, and I would listen to them. I never saw the audio files, so I have nothing to work with. If I had the audio files and I listened to them, maybe then I have a little bit more to work with. So it goes back to the question that I opened this conversation up with. What do we tell people? You know, you, again, say you weren't a paranormal investigator and you moved into an office, and all of a sudden, you know, say you didn't know all the things that you know now. What advice would you give to somebody if they think they have a paranormal problem? What's the best way to try to verify it? Or, I mean, what steps do they take? You know what I'm saying?
Well, first of all, I think a lot of these TV shows are they hurt our cause.
Well, they do damage, but they also do good because they bring awareness to the paranormal.
Well, that's true. But when they say that you're getting scratched, it's demonic, and I've seen some of those shows that actually have said that.
We all have.
And it scares. I mean, if you're moving to some place and you're experiencing paranormal activity, and you watch these shows, and all of a sudden you're watching and it's saying it's demonic, and oh my God, that's what's happening here in my house. Now I have a demon in this new house I'm living in. What the heck am I going to do? You know. Well, first of all, in as a group, we always tell the person you don't want to. Investigate your own home. That's not the thing
right.
to do.
I agree.
Okay. You do reach out to a reputable firm, a group, that knows what they're doing, that has been around a while, and you can tell in if you contact your group, they've been around a while, they have a track record, and the group themselves will always be happy to provide a track record, if not on their website. Most of the time it is on the website. It's on ours. But you don't want to freak out. You don't want to, and for us being investigators, it's easy for us to say you don't want to freak out because, you know, like Rich said, if you don't know anything about it, you're going to freak out. That would be my advice to them. You don't investigate your own home. You find a reputable group. You get permission from your landlord, if you don't own a home, for them to come in and do a consultation and possibly an investigation. And I'm sure there's other things that I'm missing. What do you think, Nicole?
It's funny that you brought this up because I actually went through a similar situation recently where I was approached by somebody that I know. His sister has two little boys, and they were seeing a man and a little boy that wasn't there, and this thing, a balloon floating up and down the stair. She was getting spooked, and so they told her to reach out to me. And I told her, I said, don't be scared. Little kids see things all the time. Kind of, you know, she friend requested me on Facebook, talked her down a little bit. I said, I will put you in touch with the right people, you know, our group, if you, you know, anybody that would make you feel better. If you need it, I'm here. Reached out to her. Kind of gave her a little bit of advice. She has not reached out because things have calmed down a little bit, but she has learned from the advice I gave her to kind of deal with it. I should say, ignore it, you know, because it's not anything bad. It's just a little bit of annoyance, and it seems to have gone away. So I tell them to reach out to somebody that knows a little bit about the situation.
Okay. So. Well, if I can expand on that.
Sure.
A few things that I would tell people, essentially, if you're in a new surrounding and, you know, you think things are going on, you feel like you're being watched or you've actually seen things, heard things, you know, document it, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Absolutely.
Write something down on a piece of paper because it is important that we know when things start to happen. Okay? Like Steve said, don't investigate your own home. Don't instigate anything. So essentially, you know, don't go off and start screaming and yelling and using vulgar language and trying to throw whatever is out of the house. Don't go with the assumption that it's anything to do with religious entities or demons or anything like that. That stuff is very, very rare. I would definitely document things, and I would also take in consideration that there could be environmental causes that are going on. You know what I mean? Just because things are happening that you don't understand doesn't mean it's paranormal. It may be paranormal to you, but it may be something that's environmental. a case, I mentioned this case numerous times, a one we did in Syracuse where the kid was waking up in the middle of the night screaming, the boogeyman, he's there. There's a tall guy in his room. He's freaking out, crying. We did the investigation out of urgency because it was a child and discovered essentially that the child was being bathed in electromagnetic energy, in electromagnetic field, and to the point where he was sensitive to it and he was starting to hallucinate. Made a recommendation of moving the room around, showed the homeowners the readings we got, told them they should talk to someone who's properly trained and an electrician or whatever, and go from there. So sometimes it's not anything that is paranormal. But if you believe it is paranormal, the best thing to do is remain calm and sort of, write down the things you have. You have a little bit of a diary or something and document it. And then basically you reach out to a reputable group, do some research, talk to someone. Now, just because you contact us doesn't mean that the first thing we're going to say is, oh my God, it's a ghost, we need to get your house. So if you talk to a group and they're recommending we need to get into an investigation, time out a second. There's a lot of things that need to go on before that process actually happens. One of the things we do is called a consultation. And Steve knows as well, as he used to set up the consultations as a case manager. Now Nicole actually does this, but essentially it's non-intrusive. We come in and we just meet you. Mm-hmm. Take a look at the place and we talk, you listen, see what you've got to say, and see if we pick up anything, and then basically take some handheld equipment and see if we get any kind of readings. Just more like environmental kind of thing, just baseline readings, I guess. And then based on that, we'll wait a little bit, see what goes on, and then if things escalate or continue, and you're scared, and, you know, obviously if there's children involved, that goes up to the list of high priority. Then we make the decision about going in and doing the investigation, and that's when Nicole will make a decision based on how she feels, or what she feels necessary for a number of people, and that sort of thing. But again, TV sensationalizes all this, and many times the cases that they actually show are the ones that are going to be the most dramatic. You know, the ones that are going to be, you know, demons and all this kind of stuff. They're going to show horrific cases. They're not going to show, probably the norm of cases are very mild or just average. They're not going to show those. That doesn't make good TV.
Not on my call.
There's no, you know, there's no drama in that. So they're going to show the ones that are the worst case ones, where they can add drama in and sensationalize it and, yes, and say that's impending danger and all that kind of stuff. And we have investigated cases like that. I'm not going to steer you wrong. I've done a few of them. And we've been involved in some quote-unquote demonic cases. But we don't know. Again, how can you really prove that that's demonic? But, you know, like Steve said, don't go investigating yourself. And if you think it's demonic, don't go on online and start Googling demonic hauntings and stuff like that. You're not going to like what you see. It's like they say about WebMD, right? Don't go online and basically diagnose yourself what you find in MDD, because you're going to end up with cancer, AIDS,
whatever.
And it turns out you have the common cold, you know, so it's probably best not to do that. But again, I only bring that up and bring that as one topic tonight because I think a lot of people don't know. They're like, what's going on? What do I do? So there you go. If there's anything you have, any questions that you have, call in to the station. We'd be more than happy to answer the point. Pete will give you the call number.
You're listening to Paranormal Investigator Radio. Call us at 1-888-429-5471. Once again, that's 1-888-429-5471. Being brought to you tonight by Steve.
And this episode is brought to you by DePaulo's Conference and Event Center. If you're planning on a wedding reception, a bridal shower, bar mitzvah, lunches, you just want to come here for lunch or dinner, come on down to Bill and they'll set you up good. Family reunions, class reunions, whatever. Whatever you have planned, you want to discuss with Bill, come on down right here at 337 West Dominic Street in Rome. And his phone number is area code 315-336-1100.
And are we not broadcasting from the DePaulo Studios?
Yes,
we
are. That's why they get a free plug. A free
chair
plug.
A plug is a combination of a pug and a regal.
There you go. And that's why Bill gets a free plug every other Tuesday. But going back to the WebMD thing, I've actually done this. Scare the hell out of myself. But,
don't do it.
Yeah. It is. It's very tempting for somebody that, you know, gets into a house, whether it's their own home or new home. You know, my goodness, this is what's happening. You go online, you go, oh my God, I got the gates of hell opening up in my basement. But yeah. And remember, if you are in a new home too, it's also, you know, your house is going to settle. You got to get used to the noises in your home.
I have an interesting thing here. Looking at local auction listings for this coming week. Look what's up for sale, Steve.
Oh.
Did you see that?
That's very good. It's a Ouija board.
But this might be worth some money. You notice this isn't Parker Brothers. This actually says William Fuld, the original inventor of the Ouija board. This might actually be an original...
Original board.
An original board.
You know what? One thing, you know, maybe this has been said 100 times, but when it comes to Ouija boards... Guys, it's a game that's made by, was it, Parker Brothers?
Yeah.
So when you buy an Ouija board game, you're getting cardboard printed, a plastic piece that moves around.
Yep.
But again, it's not the game that is the issue. It's the intent that goes along with it.
Right.
The game itself, absolutely is nothing but a material object sits on the table. But once you sit down, and then your intent is what changes the game and makes that what it is. So we recommend don't play with them. Don't use them.
Tarot cards, Ouija boards, yeah. Tarot cards, Ouija boards, all kinds of stuff like that. You know what? Like Rich just said, it's your intent. And don't be messing with that stuff.
Our friend and mentor, John Zaffis, had a very good post on his Facebook page the other night about keeping haunted objects in your house. And he's been getting an increase in phone calls of bad juju going on in people's houses with haunted objects.
Well, that's the other thing. And this can go back to the original subject.
I've also heard actual stories from people that buy stuff from garage sales or swap meets or anything. They bring them home. I heard one story. And they bought a pair of jeans, and the guy woke up in the middle of the night, and those jeans were on the chair. It's a true story. And they woke up, and he actually seen somebody standing by the pair of jeans. That wasn't part of his family.
Well, that's a great deal. Levi gives you, buy a pair of jeans, get a ghost for free.
That's right. Buy one, get one free.
Some people would love that.
Sale. Not the kind of buy one, get one free I would like, though.
People would love that.
Well, first of all, why are you buying used jeans?
I don't know.
That's what I have to say. I don't buy anything that another man's junk's been in, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Can I enlighten you on this? You probably would not. You probably will be very surprised about this. Nicole and I, having worked at the Bank of New York, we would get a lot of visitors from Asia. And the first thing they would want to do is have us bring them the Philipsons. What the hell do you want to go to Philipsons for?
They love jeans, yeah.
The thing is, they can't buy brand new jeans in Asia. There's some law in, I think, Japan or wherever it is, that they're not allowed to buy brand new blue jeans. So these bank executives will come here, do their banking business, and go home with like 100 or 200 pair of jeans, wash them, and then sell them for like $50, $60, $70 over what they're paying here. So these business trips are really business trips for them. When they go home with the real 501s, because...
Yeah, well, I
know that sounds absurd, but that's...
You know, I mean, I'm not going to say that I've never had hand-me-down, like, shirts or coats or anything, but I will not wear another man's pants or underwear. I love the classic when I go to a friend or something, my wife, oh, why don't you guys go swimming? I'm sure he's got a pair of a bathing suit you can... I said, I'm not putting my... equipment in another guy's basket. It's just not going to happen. And I don't think he's really, I got to loan him my bathing suit. I don't blame you, dude. I wouldn't loan you my bathing suit. Sorry.
I think you got spared from the candy they used to give us, Nicole. I don't think you ever had the Asian candy they would bring up here. It had like fish flavors or that one thing I tried, I'll never forget. It started fizzing and then it came out of my nose and I'm like choking and I'm like, what the hell is this? And then to reciprocate the favor, I let them try one of those little Halloween pumpkins. I thought the lady was going to have a seizure. She's like rolling on the floor, grabbing her cheek. Like, that's what we call a cavity. Welcome to American sugar.
No, we were blessed with the Delmonico's trips. With a
lucky
unlimited open bar and food.
I like bars.
Mm,
not the ones in the South, the ones that serve alcohol. So what you got for us, Nicole?
Okay, let's see. Well, I came across this yesterday. The ships that are washing ashore in Japan with corpses on them. And I guess there's nearly, it's not one or two, it's a dozen.
Maybe it's all those guys that bought the jeans at Philipsons.
Oh, see?
Could be. Mm-hmm. Just gave you a free plug, Philipsons.
Yeah, right. They say the ships are coming from Korea. And they're washing up on shore because they have found things on the ship with North Korea, let's put it that way, with part of the North Korean flag. And it says Korean People's Army on the ship. I don't know. It's so strange. I don't know. They don't know where they're coming from, but not sure why.
Well, who knows what the Kim Jong-il or whatever his name is. Yeah. He's probably killing him, sending out a ship and get rid of him. He said it's cheaper than putting him in the cemetery. Just put him on an old ship and
cheaper than feeding him too, right?
Yeah, cheaper than saving him. Yeah.
That's
more of a political deal than it is paranormal. Yeah.
Said they're wooden ships. They're old wooden ships. And
I was going to say that might predate communism. Like, that might predate the 50s.
Now it's getting weird.
The Korean People's Army? That doesn't sound like anything that's communist.
Right. So, you know, is that recent or is that something that's been floating around and just washing ashore now? Or
is it me or is there just like an increase of weird things happening everywhere? Like just weird things.
There is.
Like the UFOs in LA, there's been a lot of Bigfoot sightings. I know I'll set Rich up for that one, but there's been a lot of
the subject of the whole world.
There's the Goat Man.
The Pamela Anderson.
Goat Man.
I see Jersey Devils making another comeback. Just weird things out there.
The NHL team or the hairy dude in the woods?
The hairy dude in the woods. But along Nicole's line there, did you see the pictures of the alleged body on the floor of the Atlantic Ocean from the Titanic?
Yeah. It's floating around there, too.
There wasn't a skeleton there. It looked like it was the clothes, I would guess, of a maid that was in the first class quarters, if I had the guess looking. So I don't know if that was faked.
Well,
because the clothing looked
now.
A little too good for 100 and
it's so easy to fake
plus
things
years.
Now.
Yeah, and YouTube, I mean, I'm telling you, I'm one person that watches a lot of Bigfoot stuff on YouTube. And even if it's 100% true, and listen to that, I'm still not convinced that anything I've watched in Bigfoot is actually any significant real proof of anything.
No. Unfortunately.
Or the paranormal.
Yeah, including the footprints. Yeah, that's easy to fake.
Honestly, if it wasn't for what I've lived through and stuff we've seen on these investigations, people at home watching TV, I'd be very skeptical with the paranormal too. Like, yeah, no, that crap's not real. That's not real. But having lived it,
it's real.
Oh, yeah.
It's real, folks.
Yeah. Well, I was a huge skeptic. And, you know, and then my story, that's how I got involved in it. And then, again, you know, seeing is believing. And then I saw it, and now I believe it. So, you know, more than once. I mean, seeing it once, you're like, wow. Seeing it twice, like, okay. Seeing it the third time, yeah, I'm sold. So, that's how we roll. What else have got there, Nicole? We've got a couple things.
Let's see. Oh, King Tut's tomb. They have found it. They have, well, let's just say this. 90% certainty that they found a hidden chamber in King Tut's tomb that has not been discovered yet. Well, they just discovered it now, obviously. So that's something that, you know, you can't say for sure, but that's something that they are discussing.
All right, now, this has like been a passion for a long time, the Egyptology. I wanted to be an Egyptologist, but, you know, there's a big demand for them in Rome, New York. As a paranormal investigator, when you get into these tombs are sealed. And they're sealed with curses. And I don't know where I want to go with this. What kind of person would break those seals? You know, I know they equate like the deaths with the opening of King Tut's tomb to this bacteria and all this stuff. He had seals on his tomb that were broken. There's still seals that are in the Great Pyramids. That Zachary Weiss had his show on about the Great Pyramids. They showed areas there where there's chambers. They have seals. I mean, they're like wax or whatever they are. Something's there binding them. Why would you want to mess with that? You know what I mean? People are like, yeah, let's just... But that wasn't a Donald Trump impression either. But
now with ISIS, I'm not sure I want to go to Egypt to mess around with anything.
It's just a fascinating concept that 3,000-4,000 years ago they were still believing in
curses.
Curses, yeah. But if those actually come true, you know where I'm trying to go with this? Like, what force is enforcing that curse?
Well, obviously,
you know what I mean. Like, you break that curse,
obviously, and for them to put that on their tomb, whatever it is, they had to believe that if you did bother, it would happen to you. As far as the King Tut thing, you know, I don't know. I'm not a medical expert. I'm not, you know, I wasn't even around back in the 30s, you know. But, you know, could they have gotten sick from what was in there to begin with, never mind the curse? Yeah, sure. Could it be the curse? I don't know if I believe in curses. But personally, if I was there and they had curses on it, if you open it, would I open it? Oh, hell no.
But I think Pete's question is deeper. I think Pete's question is, what force is there in the curse? What energy? What makes the curse? What gives the curse the power to do what it does? And how do you get into that?
Here is the seal. I'm showing Steve the picture here on Google. This was the seal on King Tut's tomb that they broke. You see, it's got the papyrus. It's sealed. It's got the ropes. They broke that. These people died.
I don't know. Other than their own belief system that if you bother them while they're resting, that's going to happen to you. I don't know. What do you?
Maybe they should have brought a K2 in first, and then put a spirit box down and said, "If I open this, is anyone going to kill me?" And see what comes out. That's what I would do. Duh.
Risk versus reward. What would you do? Would you? No.
I don't think I would either. I'd just walk away.
Hells no.
I wouldn't either.
You know? Yes. No. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking the
You
chance.
Do it and let's see what happens to you first.
We've seen what happened.
But so it goes back to there is some kind of universal force good. There's some kind of universal force bad that's praying something's going to go in there that. Was his name William Carter? I know the last name was Carter.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go in there and he's going to break... What was his name?
Howard.
And he's going to break the seal. Who was the other guy with him?
Lord Carnarvon. It's almost like intent. You know what I mean? Going back to the Ouija board we talked about. The Ouija board is fine.
The paper
that's used. The seal is nothing more than paper. However, the intent behind the paper or what's written on there or what's ceremony was used to put the curse on it, just like when you use an Ouija board or intent you're doing to call upon whatever, is actually what you tap into, which is what causes the problems, good or bad.
So if you believe you're opening this and you see the curse is there and you open it, could it be your own
maybe in order for it to work you have to know it's a curse and then you violate it open it and you didn't know it was a curse maybe nothing happens to you.
So back in your mind you're thinking okay now I've broken this and now I've broken this and I'm cursed now are you going to is there some part of your system that's gonna look at you know what oh my god now I'm dying because of the curse.
You know
what I'm saying?
But I'm sure the people who opened up those chambers knew there was a curse. They probably had either the experience reading in the language or they had
people with them that
guides or locals or whatever that knew what it was.
Absolutely.
Well, the Egyptology itself is fascinating. I mean, most modern religion draws itself from the Egyptian Book of the Dead. But you know, how did we build the pyramids? How old is the Sphinx? How were they able to do brain surgery and it took us 2,000 years past when they used to do brain surgery to figure out with... But no, not at all. They obviously were part of an advanced race of humans that died out and became... Maybe it was fast food? I don't know.
Those Burger Kings in Egypt.
Must have been them freaking Italians. I don't know.
Right? I don't know. There was a Roman Empire, too. It was a pretty advanced civilization, engineering-wise.
Yeah.
Aqueducts and everything.
Like, some of that concrete is 2,000 years old, and them bridges are still standing.
Same with the Mayans,
aqueducts,
too. They do some pretty amazing stuff, and they're gone.
Yeah.
Now, have you seen on Facebook the parody drawing there, it shows the truth of Easter Island and Stonehenge. Basically, there's this gigantic human being, and the earth covers everything except his head, and his toes are Stonehenge. His toes are Stonehenge down here in Easter Island, the head is up here, so that's the, okay, but then. Like the pyramids now, they're starting to see pyramids are geographically located on ley lines. They're located on different continents. They're all sharing the same age. Although the Mexican ones are different than the Egyptian ones. Mark difference as far as construction.
Well, yeah.
The Giza ones are still always going to be... I do taken the plausibility factor there where they said that that was done by flooding aqueducts and floating the stones in and dropping them. I don't believe what you see where it was slaves of people pulling large blocks up sand ramps there.
Those were absolutely huge.
One of the theories where they built canals and channeled up the water, bring the next level, raise the water, bring the next set of...
Those blocks would float?
I guess. Well, if you put them on wood, to give it buoyancy, eventually...
Yeah, that's true. Built some...
Did I say it gave them wood?
No. Some barges, I guess.
But yes, since you mentioned the alien connection, Egyptian pictures look like grays.
Ancient aliens. I try to catch on the History Channel as much as possible.
Big almond eyes.
I've never seen that. So
you've never seen Ancient Aliens?
I've never watched Ancient Aliens.
It's a pretty interesting show. I mean, there's some nutty dudes on there, but there's some... Who's the guy with all the hair all over the place? What's his name?
That Greek guy.
The Greek guy, yeah.
Stantinopoulos? Stantinopoulos?
Is it Acropolis?
Stanford.
Some of his stuff is pretty far-fetched.
They have some interesting theories. Makes you think.
So why don't we spend a few minutes on Oak Island? I know we were talking about that beforehand.
Oak Island.
Yeah, what is it? Bring me up to speed on this whole thing of Oak Island.
Okay. So Oak Island, Nova Scotia.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of theories floating around, and you have to go back and watch the show. I don't have the exact details. There's so much information. It would take hours to go through, but basically they do think that there are hidden treasures on this island, and one of them is the Knights Templar treasures.
Knights Templar stuff, I love that.
Yep. They did bring into the mix Masons, Knights Templar. What else did they bring into it? Tons of, dating back to the 1500s. So they are now, let's fast forward to this day. There is a spot, Dan Blankenship. He lives on the island. He was one of the original treasure hunters. He dug 10X. It was originally started, six people died in the when it flooded. And he invested money to dig for this treasure, he basically stopped doing it. And now these two guys that are brothers are there, and they have picked up where he left off.
Well, what makes him think there's all this treasure there?
Stuff that they found around the island, theories that people that have brought to them.
It must be pretty strong theories if they're investing money and resources into digging into this.
Two were what? Blackbeard's treasures there? And then the Knights Templar is the more prevalent. I haven't seen the show, but...
There's tons of theories. I'm going to have to look up the different theories, but...
Oak Island, Rich, is because... It's a mine shaft, a series of shafts that are engineered that as soon as you breach a shaft, it fills with ocean water. Get these things to stop filling with ocean water.
Well, why, if they hid treasure down there, why would they do that? I mean, then they have no access to get to it unless it's something they wanted to keep down there.
Which is why they think it's the Knights Templar treasure. Okay.
Unless there's like a key, a system to do it, and they knew how to do it.
Right. Right. But I think we have some pretty smart dudes.
Like the Goonies. You know,
the secret lies with Charlotte.
Yeah.
National treasure reference.
What that means.
There's the money pit. I mean, they have a swamp theory. There's a swamp on the island. So they have a theory that there's treasure under there. The money pit is the other one. There's been a history of hundreds and hundreds of years people trying to find this treasure.
Very cool.
So it's very interesting. Very
cool. I could tell you right now, being a Mason, they had nothing to do with that.
Nothing.
That they told you that?
No, I could guarantee you they had nothing to do with it. The illusion that the Masons and the Knight Templar is the same organization as pure cocky pop.
It's Boldergash.
However, the Knights Templar, I do believe, went underground, and the theories of that is Switzerland is the Knights Templar.
That's very fascinating to me, the whole Knights Templar thing. I've done some reading on that a little bit, but... I'm still trying to find a book that's like the complete guide to the Knights Templar.
Well, I can hook you up. I have an entire library.
Well, I would love to see that. I would like to read a few books on that. That's pretty.
History has not been kind to what they were actually formed for. And just like to the listeners out there, their sole purpose wasn't to kill Muslims. Their sole purpose was to guard and protect travelers that were going into the Mideast to visit these shrine locations. They actually, for a good period of time, had very good relations with with the Jewish people, with Muslims, and they were able to coexist. It's the other knightly orders that started crap that made things come to a head.
Right.
But the Templars, you know, they are credited with the first banking. I mean, they came up with the credit card. Give them your money at a temple in France, travel to Italy with your piece of paper, they'd give you your money. Everywhere you went, your money was good because it stayed within the temple, and it was their... However,
these
when
new ideas that we see are based loosely off of something from the past.
However, when they had to fight, they fought. They were a religious order that fought. They stayed on the battlefield. If every one of them died, every one of them died. They didn't leave the field until their flag left, and that was a problem for their longevity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Their biggest, how do I want to put this? Their biggest compliment came from Richard III in the Last Crusade. When he went back there, he had the Templars actually as the last part of his army. So when he attacked Saladin and all of them forces there, the other knights would break and run, but the Templars wouldn't break and run. So if they were breaking and running, they were running into the Templars, and the Templars weren't leaving the field until... So he was at least very smart to hold them off that way, which is why he got the name the Lionhearted, but...
Richard...
And then, like everything else, they had too much money, and somebody wanted a piece of it, and they lied and coerced and took the order out. But I think the order was smarter than them, and they got away with it.
Let me ask you a question. Another paranormal discussion. What are your thoughts on these things about gates of hell? Like Bobby Mackey's is supposed to be one, right? These locations that always seem to have a hole in the ground.
The one in Knoxboro, the cave?
Yeah, I'm still looking for that one. These things called gates to hell. What is your thought on that? I mean, do you really think they exist?
Have you ever listened to the YouTube videos about the Russian ones?
Yes, I have.
From Siberia?
Screaming and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, again, how much of it's really hoax and how much is real? You know what I mean? That's the problem with all this. I mean, like Bobby Mackey's, he says, gate to hell, and they show a hole. It's a gate to hell. What conditions were met, and who deemed it a gate to hell?
I think they deem it a gate of hell because that's what TV says it is.
Well, we
could be a very bad place. You could have a lot of negative energy.
It could be. You never know. But I think, again, the TV aspect or the radio, even the radio aspect, but the Russian gate of hell, the screaming and stuff, I heard that on a particular popular radio show way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But like we discussed before, TV, radio, all this just feeds into that. And is Bobby Mackey's, could that be a gate? I believe Bobby Mackey's has something very strange going on in there.
Well, no one's going to disagree with that, but what makes it a gate to hell? What are the conditions? I mean,
Wikipedia,
to hell is going to tell me all these conditions.
What criteria makes it a gate of hell? I don't know.
You or me? If you read the book, If the Walls Start to Bleed, it's the biography of me and David. I tell about a story that happened when I was under extreme duress when my dad was really sick there before he had the surgery. And I used to watch EWTN at night. I would watch Midnight Mass and just for personal comfort and so on. But I just became unconsolable over that because Dad had just gotten some bad news from the doctors. They said they wouldn't be able to do his surgery, this and that. You know, as a 20-year-old, you're really not ready to lose a parent. But
not at all.
And there I was saying, well, I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm on the ground crying, like inconsolable. Like all of a sudden, right next to me, I don't know how to even explain this to anybody. Right next to me, I felt something open up, like just right near me. And it felt like, and almost like sounded like you're standing next to like a 2 million watt speaker. And you're like just waiting for somebody to say something and it's going to blow you apart. Like something so loud is going to speak. That happened for a couple of seconds. Then literally snap of a finger from head to toe. All that emotion left my body. And then I heard a voice come through, literally right here. I mean, it was nothing in the room with me. It was like, and it said, "You'll be fine." And it was like a very direct, I mean, it was the most commanding, authoritative voice that just came through. I don't know where that voice said, "You'll be fine." and the feeling washed away all of that sadness. And from that point on, I'm like, all right, I don't really know what that was. The next morning, I went to work. You know, I figured, I don't know what's going to be fine about it. You know, something told me it's going to be. Got a call from my dad. The doctors in Philadelphia are like, all right, we're going to do your surgery. We can't let you just die. They're like, we got to try something. And it's like this whole series of events went into place, like boom, boom, boom. And right. It's like, but I didn't have any remorse from that point on. But it's like something there. Someone told me that was an angelic intervention, maybe a St. Michael intervention. But where did that come from? I mean, it could be mental. It could be totally mental breakdown, and that's your body and brain saying, stop it, you're falling apart. But then it was the series of events that just triggered, like, boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And it's like, okay, that's the weird stuff that you encounter in the paranormal. But that voice, that voice literally filled my body. It's just like, he's fine. He'll be fine. That was the exact, he'll be fine. I don't know who it was, and he was right.
Maybe we as human beings generate it.
But if that's an angelic visit, then I guess demons are absolutely plausible, can come through the same manner. I mean, that's my take on it.
John Zampis fully believes in the demonic and the angelic based on his experiences. So here's a guy who's been around for a long time, and he's not one of these people who's very gullible. So obviously he has experiences, and he's seen it for himself. So the proof that he's been presented with was enough for him to say it exists. I had a weird experience. It's not to that magnitude, but it involves my father. My father's been in and out of the hospital. He's been sick, and he was in the hospital a couple visits ago, and he wasn't on any kind of medication other than IV at the time. So sometimes if they're giving him, like, morphine or something like that, they have to write things off as, you know, he's seeing things, listening. But he told my mother that he said, my father was just here. He came in the room, and he stood at the foot of my bed, and he just stood there and stared at me. And I was like, okay. And then he said, you're not ready. And then he left. And that was it. Now, my mother told me in the strictest confidence, and I didn't say anything to anybody. I just like, okay, yeah, dad, whatever. And then he had a heart attack afterwards. So I was talking to a medium, someone that we happen to work with in our group, and she came up to me and she said to me, how's your dad doing? I said, well, you know, he's doing better now, you know. She goes, I feel like she held her hand up to her chest, and she said, I feel like here, he hurts here, like something going there. I'm thinking to myself, well, she probably needed a heart attack or something. I mean, I let that out of the bag, or somebody told her. So I didn't put much faith in that. Then she said, don't worry, when something happens to him, you won't be there. But when it happens, he's got a gentleman that's with him, an older gentleman that's with him. And she said, an older gentleman that also hurts here. But he looks very, very old, and he's got really big, strong hands, and he's with him, and he visits him. And I'm thinking, the first thing I said, thinking, oh, you're starting to freak me out a little bit, because I'm going to tell you the story. So I just said, okay, great. And I still didn't say anything. So then I went back home, and I went to my parents' house, and my father's one of these guys who documented his whole life with photographs, everything. He was a photographer. And I went back, and my grandfather died when I was like 5, so maybe like 1970. And I looked at him, and yeah, he looks really old. I mean, he's just one of those guys, hard, just hard type old. But I found a couple pictures of him that showed like the close-up of his hands, and he had the biggest, like, most rugged, veiny hands I've ever seen. He was a carpenter, he was an iron worker, he was all that. So everything he did was with his hands. And he did have a heart attack, a massive heart attack. That's how he died. And he had, you know, heart disease. But it was just kind of coincidental that she made that statement, along with what my father said, as well as the notion of his hands, that specific thing. So I just kind of, you know, being skeptical, but then, you know, to be quite honest with you, you know, I tend to believe that she read something or saw something, and obviously, and it happened within like 2 days of when my mother told me the story, actually when this actually physically happened. So, again, was it just coincidence she thought on me? Was she doing some kind of cold reading on me? I just don't know if she could be that specific. if she's going to go back and research my family history. You know, that's tough. You know, I doubt it.
Yeah, but even if she was, it doesn't negate the fact your father seen it.
I know. And that's what brings right. this whole thing, gives it a lot of credibility, is that what he saw. You know? And again, you know, a lot of people think, I think a lot of times people don't have paranormal experiences, don't really believe in this, is because they don't give it enough credit. They don't think it's the time, they don't give it the time of day. They just, I got better things to do. This is all bull crap. And then basically when you slow down and you start looking at it and thinking about it and dealing with it, then things start to happen. You start to see things. You open up your mind to it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like when you and I investigate, Pete, we experience things, we see things. Dave will walk in the room, everything just stops. I mean, I think he puts up a little wall of resistance, just like, you know, I just want to get a reading, and just all the other stuff, the experiences, the actual, you know, things that you would get from the paranormal. He's not tuned to, doesn't believe in it, and therefore just cuts it right off. Yeah, and a lot of people are like that.
We've gotten some interesting stuff. Steve and I always get the kids. The kids pick up wherever Steve and I are at. Mm-hmm. Like even when my mom was towards the end there dying, there was nobody in the house, and she'd tell me, she's like, I don't know who all these people are here. They're scared. And she's like, that one guy sitting there, he's scaring me. And I'm like, nobody in the house. Yeah. You know, it's like, is that the brain tumor? But, and she was adamant about it. She's like, these people are scaring me. I don't know who. But then you guys did investigate my house, and there was that weirdness in the cellar there. But that's
freaky weirdness.
The coat hanger that had an EMF.
Mm-hmm.
That's strange.
One coat hanger. Literally triggered the Mel meter off to.
Well,
so whoever just bought that house in the auction, you got your money's worth.
I hope you're listening to the show tonight. So it's like all around us, you know, and those of us who are open to it and want to learn more, experience it, tune into it, and those people who just, like the Matrix. It's just like the freaking Matrix. You know, the people in the Matrix that know about the Matrix, know everything, experience everything, see it, and then those who just, like, when they see him walking down the street and there's all those thousands of people just walking, like, doing their daily commute, don't have a care in the world, don't really believe in the Matrix or whatever, they have no experiences. Tell them it's all hogwash.
You don't have
time for that. I mean, so they don't understand it or believe it or know it's there.
You have to remember, too, a lot of this subject in a lot of family groups, religious groups also, is taboo subject. And they're told from their youth on that this stuff doesn't exist. There are no such thing as this. This is not happening. And if you do see it, and we've discussed this before on the show, if you do see it, it's a demon. So don't be bothered with this stuff. Blah, 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 blah.
Or your imagination.
Like Pete's experience when he was a kid. It's just your imagination. It's crazy in your experience.
So here's a good thought for you. All these people we encounter that want something to happen, they could probably be incredible investigators. They could probably be the next generation, but nothing ever happens for them. You think that's for a reason?
Well, our group's
like the force keeps them from seeing.
We have members in our group. Like example, I came back to that don't really experience anything. They'll get hits on the meters and stuff like that, but they won't see or experience anything. Mm-hmm. And then some people, they walk in and all kinds of weird stuff goes on. Are they exaggerating, or are they really experiencing some stuff that was meant for them, or they're in tune? You know what I mean? Like when I do stuff, I mean, even when you're not around, Pete, I'll do a spirit box someplace. Pete, Peter.
I don't like Peter, your spirit box. Peter. It calls me out all the time.
It's like, it does. Who's looking for Peter? I always ask that. Who is looking for Peter? So.
Well.
I'm just grateful it's not me.
I went to a clairvoyant a couple months ago, and your name came through. Now, a bunch of names of people I know came through, and she had to push them aside to say, I'm trying to focus on you, and all these people are trying to come through for people that you know, and you're one of them, you know what I mean? So it does happen.
Yeah.
They like you, Pete.
Pete.
Well,
Pete.
We did an investigation, Nicole and I, and Larry did one at the Fulton County Museum,
mm-hmm.
and I got a very nasty response out of the Frank's box, and I had, like, 5 or 6 people with me, and that was in the second floor. It was in the room with the trains. That's mm-hmm. on the second floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe so.
The room with the mm-hmm. trains. And they were asking questions. I wasn't asking anything. It was my spirit box, and it came through and said, kill Rich. And I said, did it just say kill Rich? They're like, I think it did. And the one girl goes, that's not nice. How dare you? Rich is a nice guy.
Well, we got about a minute left, but the scariest, I got to dig that clip out for you. You were with Chris Moon in a convention. We were investigating the Hulbert House. It was like 3:30 in the morning. We had that spirit box running, and God darn it, like five of us all at the same time were like, that was Rich's voice. He just said my name. I'm like, how the hell did Rich's voice just come over to
I
box?
Said your name? Pete?
Yeah.
Weird.
So we only have 30 seconds.
Anything going on last minute?
Not much. Anybody have anything, topics to discuss on further shows, email stayspooky@yahoo.com. Or if you have any, I want to bring up anything about Oak Island, I'd like to hear it. Because you want to go home and watch
it
tonight.
Or if you're an expert and you want to be on the show, please call us.
Like I said, we're signing off, huh?
We are signing off.
Joining us for this episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Be sure to visit us online at ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.